July 3rd is the feast of the Apostle Thomas, who, oddly enough, has a surprising connection with American born-again tennis player Andre Agassi. You may have watched the former world number one on the tennis court, but did you know his dad was an Olympic boxer who fled Iran when the Shah was being toppled? The Agassis were also Iranian Christians, and they weren't Arabs, they were Assyrians. Sounds surprising, but long before the Middle East became majority Muslim and Arab, the Apostle Thomas is believed to have gotten all the way to North India, buried in Chennai. On his way, he was founding churches, and he went through the area now called, in modern times, Iran and Iraq. The people who are Christians there are called Assyrians sometimes, and they're Arabic-speaking Semites. They are the focus of this, the first of two episodes on The Good Life here on ABC Radio and on your pod with me, Noel Debien. Iraq would have been the last place I had imagined to have one of the oldest Christian churches in the world. That was until the Gulf War, when I read about the cigar-smoking Tariq Aziz, Saddam Hussein's vice president, who was famously reported as being a Catholic. Tariq Aziz, like Andre Agassi, descended from Christians converted over 1900 years ago by Thomas. These Christians in Iraq, many Orthodox Christians, but also Catholic Christians, have a very long pedigree, and tens of thousands of them have fled here to Australia, largely in Melbourne and Sydney. For the feast of St. Thomas the Apostle, the Good Life travelled out to Bosley Park in Sydney's west to meet some Iraqi Christians, Catholics in this case.
Hello, my name is Father Paul Mingana. I am assistant priest at St. Thomas, Bosley Park.
We're sitting here, you can hear the echo of a very large church that looks like it probably seats 800 or 900 people. You come from a place called Sharanesh. How far from Baghdad are we talking about there?
Well, actually it's a small village. It's in north part of Iraq, around 800 kilometers from Baghdad.
Now, St. Thomas, can we begin there? Because the reason I wanted to talk to you today was because I know that Thomas the Apostle is said to have travelled a long way. I knew that Thomas had gone to India, for example, and found the Syriac church in India, but Iraq too.
Yes, this church was named after St. Thomas because St. Thomas, for all Chaldeans in the world, is the patron, founder of Christianity in Iraq as well as in India. Before he went to India, he passed in the north part of Iraq, established a church there, and he went to India. He evangelized our region, Iraq especially, and his disciples later on.
The apostle Thaddeus or Thaddeus?
Thaddeus, Addai and Mari.
This name you just said, Addai and Mari, is one of the very ancient prayers of the church, like the prayer of consecration, which you still use in your church.
That's correct.
And I know also that this evidence of Thomas or not Thomas being in Iraq and being in India, it can't be proven to modern historical standards. But in fact, our research shows us it's probably the case.
That's the case, I think, because our liturgical books and history, we have some findings from the first century of Christianity.
We're talking here about what they call an apostolic church. An apostolic church means that the church of the Assyrians or the church in Iraq was founded by an apostle, doesn't it?
That's correct. That's the case.
So in that case, we're talking about as old as Jerusalem, as old as Rome, as old as Alexandria in Egypt. This is how old we're talking, the very origins, and we're talking Iraq, which is sort of surprising to me.
That's right. There's remaining of one church from 95 in the south part of Iraq.
Wow. A lot of you have left Iraq. That means there's a story that there are a lot of now Chaldean Christians, Chaldean Catholics here in Australia, but you've left Iraq, haven't you? Why?
We have troubles, you know, in our country, and, you know, war after war after war, you know. That's why people immigrated. My family immigrated from 91, from the second Gulf War. Because of the war and security, we left Iraq. And finally we came 92 in Australia. Like us, thousands of Chaldeans, they left Iraq, unfortunately.
It's interesting, I think, for me and perhaps for the listener as well. When you were a little boy and you were growing up in your hometown, you were growing up under Saddam Hussein, weren't you?
That's right, yeah. But at that time, we started a war with Iran for no reason. I was in the elementary school. I studied all my primary school in Arabic officially, as well as I learned my own language, which is Chaldean.
You use the word Chaldean. Now, the word Chaldean may not be as familiar to the listener. Where does the word Chaldean come from?
Well, Abraham. If you can read a bit of the Bible, Old Testament, if you go back to Genesis, the first book of the Old Testament, so many references, 3, 4, or 5, Ur the Chaldeans.
Ur of the Chaldees.
Ur the Chaldeans, yeah. That's a city in north, in south part of Iraq, Babylon. But Ur, it's one city of the Chaldeans.
So you identify with these same people. Now, when I was reading the Chaldeans, or Ur of the Chaldees, as you say, mentioned in Genesis, the first book of the Bible, these people are Semites, so they're connected to Jewish peoples, not Arabs.
That's correct. So many affinities with the Jewish people, really. Even in our liturgies, so many structures, so many hymns back to the Jewish temple.
Yeah. I suppose the curious thing for me then is that you're a Catholic priest who grew up under Saddam in your native country, who speaks Arabic normally, but when you pray, I read that you speak what we would call Eastern Aramaic, probably the language that Jesus himself spoke.
That's the case, I think. It's proven scientifically our dialect, the closest language dialect to Jesus' language, it's our spoken language now.
So when Mel Gibson did his film, Jesus the Christ, of course, and when we heard Aramaic spoken openly for the first time, you probably understood it.
Yeah, but there is some differences from 2,000 years ago. Most of the words we could very easily understood.
So now let me just connect up some more dots. You come from northern Iraq, and you mentioned northern Iraq, and we mentioned Chaldee, Ur of the Chaldees. When I was looking at where the Chaldean Christians came from, and you're from the Catholic part of the Chaldean That's Christians, they also come from Iran. They also come from Syria. So they came from a time before Iraq even existed, before Iraq was a nation state, before Iran was a nation state.
That's correct.
So who are these Assyrian people then?
Assyrian, you say Chaldean, we go back a bit more, you know, Genesis, you know, the first book of the Bible, Abraham from Ur, from Babylon. So people at that time, you know, they used to live in the south part of Iraq, which is Babel, the Chaldean. So rooted in the history, it's before Christ.
So you, Father Paul, could honestly claim probably kinship, and perhaps if we got some scientists to look at your genes and we could find Father Abraham's body, you could be related?
We hope so.
Yeah.
So, that being said, this ethnic community of Christians here in Sydney's, we're in Sydney's west here, but there's another big one in Melbourne, I think, too.
That's right.
And there are many more of you in Oceania as well. Because, again, researching this story, I discovered that there's what's called an eparchy set up. That sounds like a complicated word. But this means there's now a bishop, because there are so many of you in this region.
I think we estimated around 50,000 all over Australia and New Zealand.
You've just mentioned to me that Mass on a Sunday, you have 4 or 5 Masses, there's 400 or 500 people attend those Masses, each of the Masses. We're talking thousands of people attending here in Sydney's West. That means probably the same in Melbourne, and probably similar in New Zealand as well?
That's right, yeah. I mean, usually our people, they are close to our church. They attend Masses, they attend our activities and our feast days, Christmas and Easter, and our Patron Day feast, you know, lots of people around the church. 3rd of July, it's our Patron Day, but because it occurred on Wednesday, it has been transferred to Sunday. So it's today, you know, it's the feast day of St. Thomas, so it's a special day for all Chaldeans in Australia and New Zealand.
And there was a big gathering here at the church today earlier where you did share food and where you came together?
That's right. And actually another patriarch, Maronite bishop, was with us, and they had lunch with our archbishop and some priests.
That's another thing I wanted to ask you, because this is a complicated story. I think many Australians are now aware of the Maronites. These are the Lebanese Catholics who have a different tradition in their prayer service to what they call Latin Rite Catholics. But how similar are you to the Maronite Church when it comes to family resemblances?
We are one part of the Eastern Rite. So I think there is 21 rites. They are Catholic rites. There's Orthodox, but as Catholics, we depart from the Orthodox in the history. But 21 rites exist in the East, in the Middle East, you know, one of them in Iraq. We have some similarity between Maronite, but we have our own tradition.
Well, let me ask you, Father Paul, do you have a wife over in the presbytery, for example?
No, actually, I'm Catholic priest here, I know. But in our tradition, there is in Iraq or in Maronite, Eastern Catholics, there is some priest can get married.
Well, there's a big discussion going on in the world about this. In this country, there have been married Maronite Catholic priests. Their wives live in the presbytery, their children are here, they've got grandchildren. There's one in Sydney right now, as a matter of fact. Do the Chaldeans have this too, or do you have to take the majority custom here and remain unmarried in this country?
I was trained back in our seminary, Baghdad. Usually we keep celibacy as a Catholic priest, but in our tradition we have two priests here, they are retired and they are married.
So, in fact, the Chaldeans in that way are like the Maronites. There is a permission for some priests to be married if they want to be.
That's right. That's correct.
That being said also, I hear the Maronites speak Arabic. Do you understand the Arabic of the Maronite Catholics?
Yes, there is some words, but Arabic background, usually they understand each other, especially Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, Egypt.
Now, if a Maronite Catholic wandered in here on Sunday into this lovely church, this very large, lovely church, and came to Mass, would they know what was happening, or would they have to get a book and try to work it out?
No, I mean, for the liturgy language, it's old Aramaic. Maronite, they had Syrian, a different dialect, but they can understand very easily.
And is the liturgy the same, or is the liturgy different?
No, it's different actually, because they have a different anaphora.
Now, when you say anaphora, this is the word for Eucharistic prayer, the prayer of consecration over the bread and the wine?
That's right, yeah, that's right.
And when you say the anaphora of Ada and Mari, this is the special one, which is the Chaldean one from St. Thomas the Apostle.
That's right, yeah, that's right. The Emeritus Pope Benedict XVI, you know, he mentioned once, I know, he said, our liturgy is the ancient liturgy in the world. As a canon, you know, in the anaphora, it's back to history, 2nd to 4th century. Some prayers from 1st century. So it's very ancient liturgy.
I do remember back in my days studying theology and studying liturgy that the prayer of Adi and Mari, this Eucharistic prayer, we were told that this was the oldest one in existence and that some of it was only just after the Bible itself was written.
That's right, yeah. That's scientifically proved. The research proved that it's an old liturgy.
If an average Roman Catholic from Australia, by average I mean still the majority Roman Catholics, so a Latin Rite Catholic who's used to English every day, came along, saw the sign out the front and said, you know, Chaldean Catholic Church, and thought, oh, I better pop in for Mass. They popped in. Would they understand what's going on?
Unfortunately, no. But to accommodate them, we have English Mass at 11 o'clock in the church hall. We do that service for our children here, and they're growing in Australia. They don't understand Arabic, Syrian or Chaldean. So we introduce one Mass. We do some Chaldean, you know, some hymns, but we do like PowerPoint, all Mass in English as well.
That was a question I wanted to ask you, because when I've seen the Maronites, who have been longer, I think, maybe 40 years, many of the Maronites have been settled here, they have introduced Mass in English, and the younger people seem to want Mass in English. Is that something you're experiencing among your teenagers, among the Chaldean Catholics here?
Yeah, that's the thing, urgent need for our youth, you know, they are growing here, so that's why we introduced that Mass.
Now, that being said, I know that very early on in the history of Australia, the Maronites who came here first didn't have priests and bishops, and they ended up becoming Latin Rite Catholics. They just had to go to the local Catholic Church. Okay. How will you keep your traditions for your young people? Are you looking at this as an issue? And what sort of ideas do you have as a community for not being absorbed, if you know what I mean, disappearing into what is generally Catholic in inverted commas?
I think this is a delicate situation and question for us as a community in Australia. We do as much as we can to engage with the Latin Church, but to let them know their tradition through the Mass, and we keep Chaldean We have Saturday school, we teach our language, and we are looking forward to establish a primary school in near future.
شبحوك على ملا خايا الآلهة ملفا يا والخايا آلهة تبني يا والخيال لها تبني توديفا تبني تودي تمشي حايتا داوي حلق نومي صفرات كل يوم كل بيتا الحوسى يدعم صفرات كل يوم كل ذاتا الحوسه